But at the same time, from a consumer point of view, and certainly from my point of view, I just think there's not enough transparency. There's not enough good information there for a consumer. So I would like to think that they would take that kind of feedback, and it's not just coming from us. I know, the internet's full of concerned consumers and enthusiasts and so on, just wanting to know what the information is and what it is that they're potentially buying.
Yeah. If you
And I
want
think it's
transparency, you have to opt for an OLED TV, don't you?
Yeah, very good. Very good. We didn't discuss OLED T. We'll come back to that one. Hello, and welcome to the very first AV Forums podcast of 2025. And as always, this edition is looking back at CES. CES is the biggest show for our industry. It covers everything from TVs to robot vacuum cleaners and everything in between. And obviously, our subject matter is TV, home cinema, and AV. And it was very heavy TV wise. So, what we're going to do in this podcast is look back at the main stories, the main models that were launched, some of the technology that's been discussed, a lot of the things that haven't been discussed and disclosed, which has been quite frustrating this year. So, we're going to go through all of that as well. And then in February, we're back to our normal format for the podcast, which will be audio only, full length, and then video shorts on our main YouTube channel. So that's what we do from February onwards. This one, in terms of video and podcast and audio only, it's the same thing all the way through, just so you know that. If you're looking for the movie streaming and disc podcast, well, that comes up on the fourth Monday of every month, and also with video shorts there. And there will be some specials popping up as well throughout the year, as some of the things that we're going to talk about today are launched, or I go along to launch events, or we interview people from those companies. You can look out for special podcasts this year as well. So not only this one on the second Monday of every month, and the movies on the fourth Monday of every month, as well as all the video shorts, we'll also have some specials with interviews and so on. And one of the main things from CES, and one of the main things that we do with our coverage, is we give manufacturers their opportunity to tell us what the year ahead is going to bring in terms of product, in terms of TV, and so on. And then I believe it's our job later in the year to then test that theory, put the theories to the test, test the technologies, test that what they're telling us actually ended up in the product at the end of the day. So if you want to catch up with all of our podcasts, all of our short videos and everything with that, then obviously there are the two channels. There's Screen Time with AV Forums. That's all of our movie stuff with Kaz and the movies guys. So make sure you subscribe to that. And of course, the main AV Forums channel, please make sure you subscribe to that for all of our video reviews, interviews, tutorials, and of course, the podcast short videos. So joining me for this edition are Andy and Ian. Ian, news writer. Andy helps out behind the scenes, does a lot of article stuff, does a lot of fact checking, does a lot of proofing, and so on. Both of them worked incredibly hard on the CES coverage. It is one of the biggest shows to cover because of the different time zones as well. Makes it very, very difficult. Lots of late nights for both Ian and Andy catching up with the news and so on. I was lucky because I was over in the US, so I was US time, not sitting through the night, other than sitting editing. But yeah, it's been another one of those shows. So let's get Ian and Andy's take. You guys were not there, you were not on the show floor. And sometimes I think it's the best way to be, because when you are there, you're blinded by everything that's going on, and you can only see what's in front of you. You don't get an overview. So, Ian, what did you think of this year's show in terms of what we're going to talk about today, and other tech in general?
I thought it was quite interesting. I mean, it didn't seem quite as high key as it's been in previous years, and I don't know whether that's just me getting used to it, and like the new technology is maybe it's not as exciting as it was a couple of years ago when it was still quite new to me, coming on board the ABF team. But yeah, there was a lot of good stuff. Obviously, we're going to come to a lot more of it in greater detail in a little bit, so I won't go into it too much. But yeah, I thought there was a lot of interesting tech across the board as well. A lot of stuff that we don't usually deal with. I thought there was quite a lot of interesting stuff on the automotive side as well, which I was personally interested in, but it's not necessarily what we do, so we didn't cover it. Also a lot of PC stuff as well. There's a lot of kind of new emerging technologies. Obviously AI is always going to be a big deal, so there's a lot of that stuff around, but there's a lot of cool hardware out there as well. So I was intrigued, but maybe not quite as excited as I had been in previous years. But that's because, like I say, it's the newness and the fun factor of CES has kind of worn off, and it does become like you say, it's more a case of having a lot to cover in a short space of time and some very unsociable hours.
Well, we're going to get into detail in a little while. Andy, yourself, what did you think this year in terms of?
I was quite surprised. With all the pre CES news and rumors going around, I wasn't expecting much on the TV front at all. I was getting the sneaking suspicion over the last year or two that, you know, technology was kind of topping out across the board. But I think it was surprising that we got new panel developments from most of the manufacturers, which will obviously come on to in a minute. So LG Display with their OLED panels, we got Samsung Display with their QD OLEDs, iterative improvements, but also Hisense and TCL. Hisense came along with some panel improvements, and TCL got their Crist Glow, I think they're called, high contrast panels. So all the manufacturers, I thought, came up with something which was of interest, even if it's just from a technological advancement perspective, and it won't trickle down into consumer TVs anytime soon. But certainly for LG and Samsung, that is going to be the case. So I thought it was quite interesting. I was surprised.
Yep. So we're about to get into all the details and also maybe some controversial points of view as well from what has been announced. But before all of that, let's first of all get a message from our sponsor for this podcast, MPB.
The power to tell a story is in us all. The power to change the way we feel, our understanding, change the rules, how we see ourselves, provoke, change history. Together, let's change the bigger picture. Change access. Put camera gear in more hands and keep the story going. Buy, sell, and trade used camera gear. MPB.
And our thanks to MPB for sponsoring this podcast, but also our coverage from CES. They made it all possible for us to be out there and to cover everything while we were out there. And also Andy and Ian were back here in the UK. Getting a general overview and to explain it, if you've never been to CES, even if you have been to CES, if you haven't been post-COVID, you haven't been to CES because it has changed so much in that time. So it's massive. If you have no plan, if you don't know what you're going to go and try and see and so on, you're going to have 4 days of just wandering about halls with your jaw on the floor and not being able to take it all in. There is so much to cover when you're out there that you really have to be focused on what it is that you're going to go and see and what it is you want to go and see. And in our case, what it is that we want to cover. If you start wandering off and going off tangent, you can go down a rabbit hole pretty quickly. There is so much on show at CES. The big changes as well, having been there, this was my 18th, I think my 18th or 19th, I can never remember, and that's taken COVID out of that as well. It's changed an awful lot, and there's still a lot of building work going on. So they've changed the convention centre quite a bit. And to explain my week, it's not at the convention centre. So if you've got preconceptions of what you think CES is, or you go along a convention center, a convention hall, and it's everybody on the stand and you just go around the stands, that's not CES. That's, from our perspective, that's not CES. You could go in the Samsung stand in Central Hall and you will not see any of the new TVs. You can go in the LG stand in Central Hall. There's no new TVs on there. This is what CES is like. It's all about little rooms that are off the strip, or they're in a hotel, or they're in a suite, and so on. If you want to see all of the new stuff like that, it's a lot of running around hotel suites from different venues to different venues. You're not actually in the convention center. And then, like I say, if you are in convention center and your subject is TV, you're not going to see many TVs. I think Panasonic were the only ones that had the new TVs actually on the stand at Central Hall.
So these first look events that you get to go to, are they the kind of prime place or the prime point at which you get an indication that there's new technology and new models?
These are the only opportunities for you to see the TVs, Andy. So these are definitely invite only.
Right, so not open to the public then.
They are not open. Well, the show is not open to the public. It is a trade show, so you have to be involved in the trade in some way. These events, the first look events and so on, are media only. And that has changed in the 18 years that I've been there. It used to be very much traditional press, and we were seen as interlopers, basically. You know, online was not the thing back then. And you used to get odd looks from TV broadcast crews and so on, thinking, what are you doing here and why are you at these events? And it's gone full circle. It's now a case of we are there as traditional online. And things are full of influencers and YouTubers and, you know, TikTokers and all that kind of thing. It's changed so much. But yes, you need an invite to get into these events. A lot of the time before the show is actually talking to PRs and talking to companies and making sure that you're on the list and that you're going to get access to these things. And then it can be quite frustrating. Go on.
Sorry, I was just going to ask, I mean, you talk about the PR guys. I mean, how open do you find people out at CES in terms of giving information that's not given to the likes of me and Andy, who are back in the UK, who have to deal with basic press releases and the basic info that gets out? I mean, obviously, we're going to have 101 questions about, okay, what does this mean? What else is going to be in this TV? Yeah. How willing do you find the people to answer those kind of questions out there?
You know exactly what I know. And that never used to be the case. It used to be the case that companies were very forthcoming with the information, with the roadmap for the year ahead, what the models would be, what technologies would be in those models and so on. Now it's, you know, you go 5,000 miles the other side of the world, you turn up at these press briefings and you're given very little information these days, which was never the case. And it can be quite frustrating. I mean, I only learned about LG's new panel from Panasonic because LG would not tell us. You know, they stood us in front of the TV, but if you asked any questions, it was, yeah, we've made some tweaks. They didn't talk about the primary RGB tandem panel that was in the TV. Whereas,
you've got any insight as to why that might be?
I think a lot of it. I think a lot of it is politics. LG Display will tell you. So to explain it for people, LG is not just one company. LG's lots and lots and lots of different companies. So you've got LG Chemicals, you've got different areas of the business. So you've got LG Electronics, who make the TVs that you go out and buy in the shops. You've got LG Display, who make the panels for the TVs that you go out and buy. But they don't just sell that to LG. They will also sell that to Samsung, Panasonic, and Sony, and so on. So these companies are broken up like that. And Samsung's the same. So you've got Samsung Display, you've got Samsung's Electronics, or they call them visual displays these days. And they're all little subsidiary companies under the one umbrella. And what you tend to find is with LG, for example, is I know I'd get more information from LG Display, who sell the panels, than I will from LG Electronics, who want to create their own story that they want to put forward as their marketing. So their thing's always been OLED Evo. And if you ever listen to the marketing from LG Electronics about OLED Evo, it was always a case of, well, we're not going to call it an MLA panel because that's just one part of what an OLED Evo TV is, and so on. And that was their approach. So they never got into the, you know, they would never tell you it was a specific panel within. They would never mentioned MLA. For example,
but they just came to stamp their own branding on it, on everything, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah. So they, you know, if you ask them questions on things, they will always say, well, that's LG Display's branding of it, and we call it OLED Evo, and it's slightly different. And it can, you know, it could be MLA, it could be this tandem panel. It doesn't matter what's in it. They call it an OLED Evo TV. So yes, Ian, to answer your question, it gets very frustrating. And we'll come on to this, I think, at the end of the podcast. You know, what is the relevance of CES nowadays? Is it worth the 5,000 miles, you know, to go out there, or do you actually get more information sat at home and reading press releases and getting other information that's coming in? You know, do you get more from that than actually being at the show floor? We stopped doing the press conferences in person 10 years ago because it was impossible to get the content out from what you were seeing at that press conference, because the next one started in 15 minutes. So you had no time to actually, you know, put that news out. So you guys in the UK doing that, you know, Ian taking one, Andy taking the next, and working it that way, we get the content out a lot quicker than it would be if you were sat at these press conferences and trying to do that as well. So I hope that gives you some idea as to how difficult it is sometimes to get information, to get, you know, just what it is that you're looking at. And a lot of the time you're looking at pre-production samples, you're looking at a lot of the frustrating thing is you're not seeing any content on these TVs other than the content that the manufacturer has produced to show the aspects of the TV that they want to show. So you can't go on the show floor and make any assumption as to what the picture quality is going to be like from these TVs, because they're pre-generated, they've put this content together to show the TV in a certain manner as well. So, but yeah, it's all closed door nowadays. It's all invite only, and none of this stuff is actually on the show floor, on the stands. Very rarely will you see that. The only exceptions to those rules are Hisense and TCL. Hisense and TCL, they are the disruptor brands at the minute. They're the ones gunning after the big guys. They're the ones who want to prove themselves. So you get a lot more from those brands. You get a lot more information. You get a lot more looks at concepts, Andy. So we saw Inkjet printed OLED yet again. We saw QDL or QDEL, which again is another new upcoming technology. TCL were the only ones showing that kind of thing off, and concepts like that off actually on the show floor. So let's get on to what we did. So, you know, we produced videos, lots of videos, and we also produced lots of news stories. There will be links in the description if you're watching this on YouTube back to our channel, so you can watch these videos, or over onto AV Forum so you can read the news stories and get a little bit more detail, because we're not going to take hours at this. The content already exists. What we'll do is we'll give you some pointers here. We'll ask a few questions about, and we'll try and answer some of those questions on here about what was that we actually saw, what's actually coming up, what we think is going to happen in the coming weeks, because we're going to get all the launch events again now. And again, is it worth going to CES when you then get all the launch events a few weeks later? These are questions we're going to answer. So the first one was LG. Always is LG. LG drop a lot of news stories before CES to try and get a bit of marketing ongoing before you actually get there. Their closed door event is normally at a suite. For the past 7 years, it's been at the same suite at Mandalay Bay. So when I got my invite, I turned up at the suite at Mandalay Bay, only to find out that the suite wasn't at Mandalay Bay. It was actually at the other end of the strip. But nobody had communicated that. So when they say the suite, and you've been there the last 7 years, you just kind of assume it's where it was the last 7 years. So they had a new place at the Fontainebleau Hotel, which is the new big hotel at the bottom of the strip. Really nice suite. They've taken a lot of feedback as well. So they'd actually laid it out so we could see all the different models that were going to be shown. We could take a lot of B-roll footage, which is normally a frustration at these things, is actually getting the footage that you need to get, because you only have 45 minutes in these sessions. So yeah, we had a look at G5. So the new fourth generation OLED technology. We'll come back, because it was actually LG Display and Panasonic that told us all about that. But turning up, I knew we were going to see a G5. I had no idea Emily had gone. I will put my hands up to that. I wasn't party to any information ahead of time that was going to suggest that Emily was no longer there. Emily, for those who don't know, micro lens array, it's billions of convex lenses that are attached to each of the pixels, so 8.3 million pixels on a 4K TV. And it directs the light out towards the viewer in the simplest terms. So where you'd lose light within the panel, it redirects that light out towards the viewer, and it boosts brightness. The first question is why. I would suppose one of you is going to ask me why that's been dropped. So ask the question.
Yeah. Why? So this was the big surprise, really, wasn't it? Because MLA been touted for, well, it was two generations in. We were kind of expecting a third generation and incremental increases or technological advances. So what I thought was interesting about this was that when this was first launched, the press release from LG Display said that over time they were hoping that their entire manufacturing process would move to MLA. So even panels found in their lower end TVs, the panels that would end up in lower end TVs, such as LG Electronics' C5s or C4s, C3s as they were back then. meant that, that would trickle down to the more affordable price point. So to have it suddenly, the carpet suddenly pulled away and there be none of that in the offing, I thought was quite a turnaround. So I don't suppose there was any reason explained for that. So it's got to be for reasons such as cost, manufacturing cost,
Well, I've just told you what MLA was, so you can work it out pretty quickly that if they're putting billions of these lenses onto each, and we're talking 8.3 million pixels, that is a hell of a cost. And then you've got yields, you've got production issues, you've got. So it was an expensive technology. And the other thing, Ian, can you guess what the other thing might be from the back of that?
Well, and the reasoning for it.
Yeah, the reasoning for MLA disappearing.
Well, cost was one of the things I was thinking. I mean, the only other thing that I can kind of extrapolate is if they can deliver what they're claiming to be improved performance, because you're looking at the likes of the G3 and the G4, and they were none too shabby. They were delivering high quality TVs. G4 won TV of the Year, and yet it was Choice last year, which says pretty much all you need to know about how good that was. So, I don't know. Is the other thing literally down to performance and kind of simplify the technology to do more with less, basically?
Absolutely, and that is their market and drive. So 33% increase in brightness is what they're saying. Now that is, they always do it to the B model, when they say differences. They never do it to the C or last year's G. They always do it to the B model for that year. So they're saying 33% increase in brightness. They about 4,000 nits in vivid mode. That's not a mode that you'd probably watch in, but they're saying it's now 4,000 nits in that. But the main thing here, and the reason why I think they've taken the brave pill and dropped MLA so quickly, is that this new technology not only gives them the brightness, but it also widens color gamut, and it gives them a bit more in terms of color volume. And of course, the big selling point of QD-OLED, which is Samsung display, has been, that color volume that you can get from an RGB display like QD-OLED. And it's interesting that they're calling this primary RGB tandem OLED. So again, they've gone for wavelengths of light, and to get that wavelengths of light, and to explain, BT 2020 is such a wide color space that you're talking about really thin, really pure wavelengths of light and of color. And to achieve that, is going to take another few huge steps, really, to be honest with you, to get that to that kind of brightness and volume and so on. So again, this gives LG Display and their customers an extra boost when it comes to, that color purity, much more visible in terms of measurements, in terms of blue, and especially red and green wavelengths, where that's been a bit mixed in the past in terms of what you're actually getting from those panels. So
So,
you're
just
going
for
to.
clarity, that they've achieved this by keeping the existing blue emitting layers and replacing the
No,
yellow.
they're not the existing layers. So these are new layers.
Right.
So they will boost color purity and light output as well. It's
And
still
replace
a
the
double.
yellow one with red and green then.
So the what used to be red, green, and yellow, basically all is one stack, and then you had the two blue. What they've done now is they've kept the two blue, but changed those blues in terms of what energy that you're getting from those, and then separated out red and green, which then gives you the RGB. Now it's still a WRGB panel, so there's still a white pixel in there. That's my understanding anyway, because we haven't had any real technical breakdowns on this and how, until we can actually strip one and somebody does that and actually sees exactly how the panel's made up. But yeah, that's the understanding of it.
And
Certainly, there's.
they're calling this four stack now, aren't they? Given the small.
There's lots of different terminology going around, but yeah, I think what we can safely say now that most of them have come out with what they're calling them is that the tandem is for the two blues. It's a four stack system, because you've got four different stacks there. So you've got the two blue, the red, and the green. But what they're claiming is 99.5% of DCI-P3. Most content, Hollywood content, film content, is mastered still to the DCP3, DCI-P3 color gamut. So they're suggesting that they're getting more coverage, but also on a 3D level. So when you see most of the charts and reviews and so on, that's a 2D chart. So what they're showing you is just color saturation and how wide that color is. They're not showing you the luminance part of that. And it's luminance that's important, and that's what gives you the color volume, you know. And one of the drawbacks with WRGB panels, so with the white pixel, is that as you got brighter in terms of color, because the volume wasn't there, that color turned to white. So it didn't matter what the color was, whether it was red, green, or whatever. If it got over a certain brightness level, then that, you know, your color purity dies and it just turns to white light because it's white that's boosting it. What I'm getting from the suggestions here with the, obviously Panasonic's going to have this, LG's going to have this. I'll put money on Philips also having this panel in their TVs as well. And I would suspect that we may see other manufacturers also joining or having some models in their ranges having this technology on board. There is a rumor that the 83-inch Samsung S95F will have a tandem RGB panel in it rather than the QD OLED panel, because they don't produce QD OLED at 83 inches. So my suspicions are that we will see this being quite widely used, and the benefits being that it has more color volume, which was always what Samsung's claims were with QD OLED. And obviously this is LG's comeback. So I think this is why they've taken the brave pill. Plus they can get across the fact it's saving about 20% in terms of power consumption. So not only is it getting 33% brighter, but they can also say, well, we're saving 20% on the brightness side, we're getting more of that color volume, we're getting more of DCI coverage. And I think one of the interesting things, that was a claim that Panasonic made, was we're going to get about 80% of BT2020 color from this new panel. And that's a significant jump for a WRGB TV, because they were around about the early 70s. So around about 72 to 74% is what I was measuring on an MLA panel. If they're now saying it's high 80s, that's a significant jump as well in terms of BT2020 coverage.
So very interesting that you mentioned about the 83-inch Samsung S95.
Yeah, that's something we'll come on to, I think, when we talk about Samsung, because I foresee issues here.
Their TVs kind of in the limelight, because then you'll have a direct comparison between the QD OLED of the 55, 65, and 77.
An interesting take on it. I'm more concerned about the consumer and a panel lottery, and I'm a bit concerned about what's actually going to happen. So that's LG. G5 is an interesting model. C5, it's not a hell of a big jump from C4, to be honest. I'm going to get more information, more hands-on, spend some time with these TVs in probably the next 6 weeks. So stay tuned for more on that.
Yeah, there's also the M5 as well with the zero connect box.
Yeah, M5, very similar. Well, it's exactly the same TV as G5. It just has that box. The only improvement they've made to the box is that it'll work in a cupboard now. So the last connect boxes, they needed to have line of sight for the wireless to work. They're saying now you can put it in your TV cabinet, close the door, it will work. It doesn't need that direct line of sight.
Really boost to the range? Because I think the range was quite limited before. I don't know if it's been extended this year. They haven't mentioned anything.
They didn't mention anything there. The main thrust of that demonstration that I saw was they put it in a cupboard and it still worked. So again, we're going to get more, and this is the frustrating thing, and we'll come back to it at the end. You know, actually getting down and getting into the nitty-gritty, it's like and I'm getting sick of this reply now, manufacturers, but every time you ask, well, how many zones has it got, or you know, how much have you improved the brightness, or you know, what's the color gamut like now, the reply I get now is, oh well, you'll be able to measure it when you get one. So what did I tell my audience? Wait till I measure it. So why am I here?
Thoughts on WebOS 25 at all? Anything jump out?
It looks really nice and sleek. Again, I couldn't see any major updates other than some of the wish list stuff that I asked for has been added. So, and some of the stuff that I did feedback to them last year, when I was asked my views on things, they have changed a few things with their WebOS, which I think makes it better. You know, the chatbot that was hidden in accessibility last year, and I couldn't understand why, because as a new user to a TV, as somebody who's not as au fait with TVs as we are in our audiences, I thought it was a great feature, and I thought, well, why hide it away in an accessibility menu? Why not have it up front, and they've done that. They've made it a bit more. Well, it's right there, front and center. As soon as you start the TV up, you get the option to use the chatbot now. And you can ask it anything you like, you know, how do I do this or how do I do that and so on. So a lot of the other things were the same as what's been there in the past, just slight tweaks to the card system and so on. But again, this is stuff that we'll get into in a lot more detail in the next few weeks once we manage to start getting hands on and get the UK events and being able to actually spend some time with the units that are actually going to come to the UK and Europe rather than CS, which is a worldwide thing. And there are differences. There's going to be differences to remote controls. There's going to be differences to a few other bits and pieces between different territories. And Hisense are going back to things being different. We'll cover that in a little while. So let's move on to Samsung Display very, very quickly. So QD OLED. Again, I spent some time with Samsung Display. Chirac is always up for an interview. You always get lots of information from him. So that was good. I managed to get quite a bit of information. The new hyper-efficient EL layer, they're calling it 3.0. So they're actually using a new compound material, organic material there to boost the blue luminance. So if you're not aware of how QD OLED works, it's blue light. Then you have your QD film on top of that, which is red and green. There is a blue there, but blue is your main light. And of course, it interacts with the red and green filter, and that's what produces your RGB, your red, green, and blue light. It's what makes their color purity so pure. It's why you get the color volume from that. They're again going for 4,000 nits this year compared to 3,000 last year. Again, that's vivid mode. That's not in a calibrated mode or in an accurate out-of-the-box mode. So I would suggest that that's probably going to be around about 2,000 nits, maybe in a good accurate mode with the brightness tuned to your room. So that's still a significant jump on the 1,500 from this year. So I think we'll see about 500 nits added onto that in terms of.
Wasn't the full screen brightness?
Full screen's up to 400 and 40? Something.
Yeah,
let me just see the notes. Yeah, 440. So yeah, 400 nits. Again, this is kind of what LG are saying about their panels as well. They're reckoning it'll be 300-400 nits. Again, we will test all this when we get it through, and we do test accurately into industry standards and so on. We don't just shove things in vivid mode, but it's incremental change. Some of the interesting stuff that was there was a panel, a 27-inch panel, which could do 500 hertz motion. That was interesting to see. And this is an area where I think we'll see QD OLED mature quite quickly, as in monitors, for gaming monitors and that kind of thing, computer monitors, productivity. So we will see the TVs, but the main thrust certainly for that technology, and I think where they're going to get a foothold and maybe start to bring costs down in terms of production so they can then look at creating 83 inches and bigger panels is through using the monitor side of things to develop their technology a little bit more. It's very interesting seeing how that's progressing. It's going to be interesting again to get those TVs in once we get them. So again, Samsung Display, different from Samsung Electronics. Samsung Display sell the panels to other people. When I asked them on camera, will we see other manufacturers other than Samsung using these panels? The answer was yes, but no specifics on that. And obviously he's not going to...
Presumably Sony?
Well, that's what I would guess on. And I think we'll see some of the smaller 27-inch monitors and so on being used by various manufacturers as well for monitors and gaming stuff. I think we're going to see that. Automotive was very interesting. And again, it's not something that you automatically think of when you think of these display technologies, but obviously OLED, you can bend OLED, you can manipulate it into different areas. You can use it in different ways, like transparent OLED for some purposes. And so, lots of interesting takes on QD OLED. In terms of the TVs, 55, 65, 77 inch from Samsung, they're calling it OLED and they're not calling it QD OLED. And this is because 83 inches, as we've already mentioned, it's going to be a LG WRGB panel. My money would be on a tandem RGB panel in that TV for that screen size. As long as you're aware of this, I don't see an issue. What I have an issue with, and I hope Samsung will take the feedback on board as it's intended and maybe look at their marketing a little bit, is to actually say what kind of panel is in the TV. My concern is S90, S85F, those ranges, you're going to get more of a mix of, because they're cheaper models. My presumption there is that they are going to be WRGB panels, which are cheaper to manufacture, and not tandem panels either. They will be OLED Evo style panels. That's my feeling, is that we're going to have a bit of a potential lottery there. And this is why I want Samsung to be a bit more open and a bit more transparent, because there's a lot of rumour, a lot of conjecture out there at the minute as to what's going into what. And I just think they need to be honest and just say the S90 range is made up of, you know, this screen size and it'll have this panel. I think if you tell people and they know what they're buying, I don't see an issue with that. It's when you're not telling people and you're just putting it under one moniker. That makes it difficult for me to...
As an outsider, someone who doesn't know the answer to this question in advance of asking it for the sake of convenience, but as a consumer then, if you were looking for those things and you wanted to know the answer, what are the criteria that you're looking for that might help you identify what panels are being used where?
Unless you're used to seeing these panels, it is quite difficult. I mean, obviously white looks cyan on a WRGB panel, but if I was to say to you, white looks cyan, do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Does Joe Public? No. The way that we were able to confirm, I mean, you could see it. If you're used to watching these TVs, you can see it. If you're not, it's more difficult. One way that we used to confirm it was I used the macro lens on my iPhone. The guy standing next to the TV was saying, do not touch the TV under any circumstances. So I was trying to balance the phone as close to the panel as possible so I could then zoom in and see what the pixel structure actually was. And of course, it's WRGB pixel. And the way you can tell with the pixels is it's a triangular layout for QD OLED. It's horizontal layout, horizontal and vertical layout for normal OLED. And that's how you tell. And obviously, when I took the photograph and then looked at it, I could see the white pixel as well, which kind of gives it away. For a consumer, it's a lot more difficult. And this is my concern. And I'm not lambasting Samsung in any way. I'm not accusing them of anything at this moment in time. I'm just saying, for transparency, to help the consumer make a more informed purchasing decision, I think it's important that they moniker a QD OLED as a QD OLED and OLED as OLED. And then you know what's what. And then the consumer then has that information to make the decision. And I don't think it would affect sales in any way, you know, changing panel types. So as long as the consumer knows what it is that they're buying. Another concern I have is if they're going to do that at the same screen size. So is there going to be a mix of 55 inches that are WRGB or QD OLED? And it just depends what time of the day or week or whatever and what batch you buy.
That sounds really problematic, that does.
Doesn't it? And again, you know, I can see it from both sides. I can see it from Samsung's point of view that they're looking at the costs and manufacturing and how they streamline what they're doing. But at the same time, from a consumer point of view, and certainly from my point of view, I just think there's not enough transparency. There's not enough good information there for a consumer. So I would like to think that they would take that kind of feedback. And it's not just coming from us. I know, you know, the internet's full of concerned consumers and enthusiasts and so on, just wanting to know what the information is and what it is that they're potentially buying.
You want transparency, you have to opt for an OLED T, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Very good. We didn't discuss OLED T. We'll come back to that one because I'm going to discuss some of the Halo TVs. But yes, a bit of transparency, and we're not talking about transparent OLED, but we just need that good information. And I don't think that's a big ask. I really don't think it's a big ask, just to have that information to hand. Right. Let's talk about some of the other brands. Andy, what's your view of, and please be honest here, because, you know, AV Forums is always a bit, we're always about being honest, about being transparent ourselves and trying to give good information. So, Andy, I want your genuine opinion. What is your opinion of Hisense as a brand? What is your What's been your experience of that brand, if any?
That's a good question, because I've tracked this over the period that I've been working with AV Forums, and a number of years ago, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it did feel like it was very much a cheap high street style brand that someone who was into their TVs would probably just push to one side, and it would definitely be a small bedroom TV or something that was, if you wanted something particularly cheap and cheerful. Over the last couple of years, that clearly has changed with a lot of the technologies that they've been pushing, and also with their reasonable pricing, and TCL kind of falls into this. They're even more aggressively priced in some circumstances. And we've been finding that TCL and Hisense have been edging their way into our kind of best of lists with all round capabilities, technologies, and use cases. Certainly in the gaming scenario, for value for money, and the degree that the amount of technology that you're getting for that money. So I think that they have definitely come up. In my estimation, and I assume that they have done it in a lot of industry watchers' views as well. So yeah, that's what my perception is of them.
Andy, Ian, what was yours?
It's similar, really. I think one of the issues that I have from a UK perspective is that the same with TCL is that Hisense obviously operates in different countries, and I've not always been 100% convinced that those countries communicate particularly well with each other in terms of what everybody's doing individually. So you end up with kind of a mishmash of information, some of which applies to the US, some of which applies to the UK, some of which might apply to Eastern markets or something else. So it can be quite hard to kind of correlate, or to kind of at the early stages of the, you know, like something like CES, to be able to determine what technologies are going to be used where and so on and so forth. But yeah, I'm with Andy. I think both Hisense and TCL have kind of, they've done well to find a footing for themselves first and foremost, you know, like Andy says, using the budget markets to establish an audience, sort of building themselves up. And now you can see that they're all very keen to make the next step and sort of, you know, join the big boys. They're always talking about how they're up there number two in certain markets in the world for various, you know, carefully worded categories, best shipping, best, you know, numbers of sales in certain territories and so on and so forth. So you can see that they're certainly doing well from a commercial point of view. Maybe not doing quite so well when it comes to the final reviews, which might influence some people's decision in terms, not necessarily a snobbishness towards certain brands, you know, or certain loyalty towards certain brands, but there's still, people might still take a little bit of convincing to opt for the likes of a Hisense or a TCL over Sony, Panasonic, LG and Samsung. But I think the gaps are getting smaller. And I think especially when it comes to pricing, you know, like Annie says, they're delivering a lot of good technology and often at lower prices. So, you know, in times such as these, you know, it does make them a decent option for a lot of people who maybe can't afford to be spending, you know, 5-10 grand on a TV every year. Yeah.
And of course, from their perspectives, they're both, Hisense especially, but they're both pushing these large screen TV models now, which will have an attraction for a certain part of the market to be get something which is almost wall filling for under 2 grand. So I think for the average consumer, they are a very, very attractive proposition. Like I say, the hardcore AV types are probably going to lean more towards LG's and Samsung, but that's a small portion of the market and probably quite an insignificant one as far as Hisense and TCL.
Yeah. I think it says a lot that you see like the likes of Samsung at CES were pushing 115-inch, 110-inch or 100-inch TVs. Sort of, I don't know if that's necessarily in response to what the likes of Hisense have done in previous years, because they, you know, we thought, you know, who needs a 100-inch TV? You know, what's wrong with, like, you know, I remember when like 60 inches was something, it was ridiculously huge, and now you're trying to sell a 115-inch TV. But clearly there's a market, clearly they're selling it. Everyone is thinking, oh, you know, maybe these guys are onto something after all. Maybe we should be following suit. So I think it'll be interesting to see how those models compare, not just in terms of the specs, but in terms of the pricing as well, and whether they can really compete whether the bigger companies can compete at a lower price, or the more established companies, should I say, can compete at lower prices with the likes of Hisense and TCL.
Yeah. So for me, if I was to say Lucky Gold Star, would that mean anything to you guys?
No.
So just 15 years ago, Lucky Gold Star were LG. That was their brand, and they.
All right, LG. Okay, fair enough.
So they sold very cheap TVs and were a disruptor. And look at them now. Samsung, the same. You know, at that point, 15 years ago, they weren't world number one. They were an up and coming brand, but. And you just have to look at that cycle and you know what's coming, because Hisense and TCL are going through exactly the same phases in their build up and in their brands. And I think they're now past that stage. I think having a look at where these brands are, these are the innovators. These are the guys who are going to make the big next investment in technology. It'll be interesting to see who it is that takes the jump. TCL's advantage is that they have... CSOT, which is their manufacturing side, so it's part of TCL, but they make the panels, which has a bit more clout than Hisense does at this moment in time in terms of manufacturing size, manufacturing scale, that kind of thing. But you know, it was LG who invested in OLED and bet the house on OLED and won with that in terms of where they are now as a brand and where we are now with TVs. And I think you're about to see this happen with TCL and Hisense. They were all a lot more bullish this year. The gloves were off in terms of, we are here to compete. We are here to show you that we can do this kind of technology, that we are masters at this kind of technology. And Hisense impressed me the most in terms of, look what we can do. Look what's at the front of our stand. And the thing that did it for me was their already go to market with the RGB mini LED backlighting. They can come to market this year with that, whereas everybody else other than Samsung are a little bit further out on that. So again, when you're looking at what they can offer in terms of this RGB mini LED backlight model, 116 inches. So again, they've gone 1 inch better this year, so they can claim the world's largest consumer model. The trichroma LED, so this is just their marketing way of describing it. So basically, it's a normal backlight, but it uses RGB pixels, subpixels. So where traditionally... an LED backlight on a LCD TV has been white or blue light. This can now do red, green, and blue on a per pixel, sub-pixel basis. What is the advantage of that? Well, the advantage is that you're still going to have your LCD panel, your QD LCD panel as well. But being able to produce independent red, green, and blue color behind that panel rather than just blue or white light gives you more color purity, which then obviously boosts up your color volume. It gives you more in terms of brightness when it comes to that as well. And it helps when it comes to local dimming. So it's still a FALD TV, so a full array local dimming TV. It will still have zones where they control different zones, but it gives it just that little bit more in terms of control. So in terms of blooming, in terms of other things that have held back LCD up until now, it's another twist. And the other really impressive thing, and this is what impressed me the most that Hisense are bringing this to market, is think of the processing power that you then need to control all these backlights, the different RGB backlights. How does the display matrix then, and display driver, has to tell the backlight what it wants, when it wants, and you need as quick a latency, as low a latency as possible to achieve that as well. And I think it's only where we are now with AI processing, with the processing power that we have now, that you're actually able to do this and to see this. And when you do see it, and I did see it, and yes, it was on a show floor, and yes, it was handpicked material that was made to show the TV in its best light, but it looked phenomenal. It looks really, really, really good. I mean, the test will be in haloing and so on, and using difficult test scenes, and that's where the test will be, and the test will also be in the tone mapping and so on. And this is a big task for TCL and Hisense again this year. They have been behind the curve when it comes to tone mapping, processing power, that kind of thing. They haven't quite been as polished as the A brands. I think you're going to see a big change this year, just from what I've seen with their Halo products, especially Hisense. Very, very impressive. And just to
Hisense showed off micro LED as well, didn't they? 136.
Yeah, micro LED. I'm not that fussed about micro LED. I've seen micro LED so many times, and you can still see the panel joins. It's the holy grail, but it's the holy grail because it's going to be so damn difficult to produce this display technology, and it's been the Neely kid for 10 years now. Yeah. And it's, I still think it's another 5 to 10 years away before we see consumer level micro LED. So I'm not as excited. It looked great. Don't get me wrong. The Hisense stand looked fantastic. The 160, 336 inch next to each other. There was 108 inch as well that nobody was paying any attention to because that's too small. But yeah, it fantastic technology, micro LED. But I think RGB mini LED had me more excited because this is actually tangible. It's going to be available in the next couple of years. It's, you know, once they get the product and the lines up and they can get the yields up, we're going to see this coming in to smaller screen sizes. And it is going to make a difference when it comes to LCD mini LED TVs. And this is where OLED manufacturers need to be worried, and why we're getting tandem RGB panels and so on. Because again, there is a threat from mini LED. Companies like Hisense and TCL have bet on that technology other than OLED. You know, neither of those manufacturers had a viable OLED proposition in their TVs. It's all mini LED TVs. So these are the guys who, you know, they want to compete, they want to be the best, and they're going to put huge budget into it, and they're going to do the R&D. And this is what I was saying again, you know, lucky gold star, where were they 15 years ago? And look at them now with OLED. We're going to see another spurt of technology from Hisense and TCL in terms of mini LED and LCD TV, and that's exciting. I mean, you're talking 10,000 nits peak brightness on this 116 inch, allegedly 38% reduction in blue light, which is blue light was a big thing this year. Again, you know, it is damaging. There was a lot of emphasis onto that. 97% of BT 2020. That would make it a record breaker if it did that. That would make it one of the only consumer TVs that gets as wide as that in terms of 2020. And again, we're talking about wavelengths of light. So the separate RGB backlight helps with, you know, more focused wavelengths to get you out to that those points in the BT 2020 color space. And again, they've obviously thought about the sound side of things as well. So it's fully packed in terms of sound because it's such a large screen and so on. That excited me, Andy, more than the 136 and 163. They were, yeah, great. The micro LED TV that did impress me the most was Samsung's 21x9 micro LED TV because they're using glass to join the panels rather than plastic. So up until now, it's plastic at the side, and then the two panels come together, and have to get the wiring down there as well. So that's why it's plastic, and they can only get it a certain thinness, and that's why you can still see the join from certain angles. You can still see the join between the panels. With the glass, they can actually drill a small hole down the back of the panel where they run the wiring, and then the rest of the front of the panels are glass, which means that light shines through them. So it makes it really, really difficult, no matter what angle you're at. It makes it really, really difficult to then see the joins. And on that TV, I saw no joins whatsoever. I could not see where those panels were joined together. So that was a really, really interesting. And 21x9, who does not want 140-inch 21x9 TV? If you're a film fan, if you're a film director or a producer, or, you know, those are the clients for that TV at the minute. And then it'll trickle down to where we are. But yeah, the most exciting thing for me this year was the RGB backlighting. I'm going to pull Samsung up again here. Forgive me. Samsung, if you're going to call something a micro LED, make sure it's a micro LED TV that you're showing off. They were rather naughty at the first look event. They had a few of us scratching our heads and reassessing what it was that we actually saw. So on their stand, they had their micro LED section where they had all their micro LED screens, including the 21x9 TV that you've just seen some video clips of if you're watching on YouTube, or you can go and check out that video. Right next to it, they had an RGB micro LED TV. And not a lot of information at the side other than saying it was a micro LED TV. It was not a micro LED TV. And I've seen a few videos go out, and I was guilty as well for almost falling for it. Until I actually took a closer look at the TV, it was an LCD panel with a micro LED backlight system. So an RGB, and they were calling it micro LED backlight. It was a mini LED, although they had shrunk down the LEDs. They didn't give any information on the first look event, and I only found out what it actually was and in much better detail having gone to their innovation room a short time after having seen the TV in the first look. I hope they change that for transparency when they bring it to market and make it a little bit more clear as to what it is. I mean, this is the company that launched LED TVs, and there's no such thing as an LED TV. Again, if you're going to call it micro LED, that's perhaps a little bit disingenuous calling it that, because I know quite a few of us had to go back and check what it was that we were actually looking at. It's an RGB mini LED TV, if you want to be technically correct on that.
I suppose that says something, that if they're just putting TVs on the stand and you're having difficulty discerning the difference in quality between a micro LED and a mini LED, that
what it does
so close to itself.
And kudos to them. They had fooled quite a few of us into thinking it was a micro LED TV that we were looking at. I just thought, could have been explained a little bit better, and the text's on the wall. So in your first look event, all you can do is read what's on the wall. There's no PR guy there telling you what's what, and or PR lass there telling you what's what. You're kind of, and it's such a busy environment. There's so many people around. You're jostling for position. You're quickly trying to assess what it is you're looking at. So from that aspect, yes, it was very, very, very impressive. It's an 8K panel. It looked phenomenal. It had me convinced that it was a micro LED TV that I was initially looking at. What rung the alarm bells was RGB, and it's like, well, hang on a minute. How can it be? Because it's already an RGB display, micro LED. Mm-hmm.
But it saved you a few hours in the edit suite as well.
It did, yeah. Saved a few hours. But it's coming down to naming conventions and what you're actually calling this stuff. Let's all be on the same hymn sheet, just for the consumer's sake at the end of the day. You know, the consumer wants to know what it is they're buying. So let's just be a little bit more professional when it comes to saying exactly what things are and what the technology is and so on. That is exciting technology, RGB mini LED backlighting. It's going to move things on a little bit more. The processing power is so powerful now. I think that's going to make a big difference as well when it comes to picture quality. And I think we're going to start seeing that this year. TCL had quite a few QD mini LED TVs to bring to market. I'm not going to go into any great detail on that because we're going to get more detail on our territory, which is UK, and what we're going to get to see. But what you can do, and I had no official word on this other than a what you can maybe do is look at the US models and just presume that we are going to get different model numbers, same TVs, different model numbers. That'd be an educated guess, and a pretty close educated guess. 98-inch X11K. So the 11K is coming to UK. It is going to keep the same name. More information on that in the next few weeks. Again, that's a QD mini LED TV. It looked very good. Their mini LED RGB mini LED TV is not coming to market this year, but they did have a prototype on the stand that they were showing off. They might fast track that, seeing as Hisense do have a model coming to market in 2025, so that may change. We'll have more details on that. Andy, you already mentioned the Crystglow HVA panel. Looked very impressive. The impressive thing here is the contrast ratio. So it is a VA panel. It's worked on by CSOT. Their hosting a 7,000-to-1 contrast ratio. I do believe that because I tested the C855 recently and it was 6,100-to-1, which is really impressive for a VA panel. So yeah, it's got a new backlight controller in there, very similar to Bravia 9 from Sony. So, you know, we were talking about mini drivers on the back of the panels controlling each cluster, and very, very similar take on that kind of thing from TCL in terms of how they're going to do their backlight, and it gives it more brightness, better energy efficiency. They can move light to where they want it. They can take light away if it's a dark area and so on. Marek was talking about much better black levels, shadow detail, less haloing and so on. So yeah, interesting to see that. And everything from like a 50 inch all the way up to 98 inch at least, and there'll be the 115s will still be available. So the 955 Max, it will be available. I reviewed that last year. I had a good look at that in Poland last year, tail end of last year. Very impressive TV. I think it's 40,000 zones, or I off the top of my head, I could have that wrong. It could be more than that. But yeah, that's a very impressive TV. Another thing I saw a lot of, TCL have one, Hisense have one, Samsung have had the Frame for a while, and that's lifestyle TVs. So I don't know if you guys picked up on this from watching the coverage from the UK and so on. Another big market, and one that's impressive because for those who don't know, I had a help out at CES with Michelle. So Michelle knows nothing about TVs. She just helps me with the cameras and taking notes and all the rest of it. And she was immediately drawn to the 300 Pro lifestyle TV on the TCL stand, and she stood there for ages because you could draw things on the screen and it would turn it into an AI picture, and it did loads of fascinating things. And again, it looked really, really nice, and a Bang & Olufsen sound system added to that as well. It was really quite impressive.
Now, I thought that was interesting that they seem to have moved to Bang & Olufsen in Europe, but they're still retaining the Onkyo in the States for their sound systems. That's what it appeared to me to be anyway, but yeah, there did seem to be a preponderance of these canvas lifestyle TVs. This all seem, you know, following the Frame from Samsung, they all seem to be easel mounted with a kind of wooden surround mirroring a frame. Hisense has one as well. They've got a canvas 55 inch.
And they look really impressive. Obviously, they have the anti-reflective, anti-glare surface, which makes it look like a canvas. The only thing it gives it away is the brightness, obviously. You know, when you see a proper canvas painting, it doesn't pop off this pop off the canvas to you. Whereas, obviously, if it's in TV form, then it does. And Stu's showing a bit of the video there from Marek. And if he just goes on maybe another 10 seconds, you'll be able to see that TV if you're watching on YouTube. And, of course, you can watch these videos as well on our YouTube channel where we go into a lot of detail. But, yeah, that is the TV that we're talking about there that's on screen right now. So it has that pedestal stand, almost like a whiteboard type look, subwoofer underneath the soundbar, Bang & Olufsen soundbar there as well, and that anti-reflective screen. And of course, you put artwork up on there, or like I say, you could draw a squirrel or something and it'll change it. The AI will recognize what it is that you're drawing, depending on how good you are being an artist. And it'll then, you know, create that into a 3D sort of finished article type thing. So very, very impressive. And again, as enthusiasts, I think we forget about that side of the market. That is a big thing, and aesthetics. So, you know, what looks good in a living room is important to a lot of people out there. And again, design-wise, in terms of TVs, they are rectangular black things that just hang on the wall or sit on a stand, and nothing's really changed there. Now, the one TV that did impress me design-wise, yet when I read the comments under the video, everybody's saying, what a fugly TV that is. And that was the Panasonic. I thought the new Panasonic looks excellent.
You've been after a change for years, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pushing them for donkeys over that. 7 years, I think, we had that last chassis. It's not hugely different, but what they have done is they've used some really nice fabric to cover the speakers on the side. The panel sits out slightly. It reminds me a lot of the OLED Plus 959 from Philips. It's just not as chunky. It's not as big as that chassis design, but very similar. They've redesigned the speaker enclosures. The LCR on the bottom of the screen looks a lot nicer than the older model. There are the side firing speakers, which are about three quarters of the way up each side of the chassis. They're fabric covered. And then the top is fabric covered as well with your up firing drivers up there. What was really interesting, and it's something that I'm interested to play about with when I get one in eventually for review and to have a look at in a lot more detail, is the airflow, the thermal airflow that they've designed. Panasonic, what they do is they take an open panel from LG Display, and then they add their own engineering onto the back of that. They have done that for a number of years now. I believe it was an initial deal that they came to with LG Display that they took. It's the same as what Larva do. They have their production line, they bring in the panel, which is an open back panel, and add their own engineering on. And that's what Panasonic do with their TV. That's what they're doing with this one. And they've designed it in such a way that the airflow goes a certain way down the back. It cools the back of the panel. It means that it can certainly push the brightness of that and give it a lot more brightness output. It's still a pretty warm TV. I was standing next to the one in the final best TV video that we produced. There's a lot of nice footage in there because I managed to find one on the show floor. The actual event was in a nightclub, the launch event, which was impossible for China. Great venue. I've always wanted to go into Omnia in Caesars. It's one of those nightclubs. It's, you know, it's famous. And I thought, oh, being that, what I didn't think about was it pitch black and you're trying to look at this black rectangle in a black room and trying to film it was quite difficult. But yeah, we saw one on the show floor. I managed to get a lot better video of it, which is in the best TVs video. And it gives you a much better idea of the design. A really, really nice looking TV. Again, tandem RGB panel in there. So it has the new panel. They're doing their own twist on it. They've done their own engineering in terms of airflow and so on, in terms of processing. So it'll be interesting. Panasonic have never made a bad TV. We need to see.
Clarity, this is the Z95B, isn't it?
Z95B, yeah, sorry. I've got a habit of talking about stuff and not telling you what the model number is. Yeah, Z75B. Stu's showing you the video now if you're watching on YouTube. So yeah, the primary RGB tandem OLED panel, the airflow, the design's really nice. It's still got the round stand. I'm kind of warming to that now. I hated it when they first brought it in. I do not like round stands. They just look cheap. But I think we're just getting used to it now. But yeah, and that was my TV of the show. And the reason why it was my TV of the show is I could have quite easily picked the Hisense RGB mini LED. My thinking was I could make that TV of the show, but it's a Halo product. Yes, it's going to come to market, but you're talking tens of thousands of pounds for that TV. And to me, best TV should be something that you can go out and buy. Or have the potential to go out and buy this year. So for me, the Panasonic did it because, and for a few reasons, they explained the technology, they explained what it was that the Z95A is, what technology it was using, the speaker system, they explained the processing, they explained what they wanted the TV to be this year, what it was that they're aiming for and so on. A lot of manufacturers not doing that, not talking to us and saying this. They were just saying, yeah, this is the new G5 model. We've tweaked the panel. And that tells me nothing. And it tells the end user out there absolutely nothing. And this is your opportunity, CES, for your marketing departments to be telling us what it is that you are doing for the year, why we should go and pay attention to these TVs, why consumers should potentially go and buy the TV. At the end of the day, it's a TV business. So tell us. I don't get the secrecy. I don't get this. Yeah, we'll tell you a little bit later on what's what. Well, no, we've come 5,000 miles to see these products, to tell our viewers, our listeners, our readers all about these products. Tell us about them. Tell us what's so great. And Panasonic did that. Hats off to Panasonic. Absolutely brilliant launch event. They had a really nice stand at CES. They were showing the product off. It was on stand. People could go and see it. They could touch it, feel it. Other manufacturers, that wasn't the case, other than Hisense and TCL. Everybody else, very sort of hands off, private room, private suite, if you wanted to see the TV. So yeah, to wrap up on all of this, it's going to be another exciting year. Did we learn anything new at CES? Yes, we did, from certain sectors of the market, not everybody. And that's the frustrating thing. I could have read the press release and been at home and not have traveled 5,000 miles, not have been carrying loads of gear, trying to get from venue to venue and so on. If you're asking people to make that kind of journey and come to see stuff, try and show us what it is that you're going to sell us this year, and try and be a bit open about it and talk about the technology and so on. That'd be my biggest gripe. I don't know about you guys, how it came across from your perspective and what you were doing, but for me it was frustrating going to all that effort.
Yeah, I mean, over the years that you've been doing it, we've been covering it remotely, and that seems like you can get quite a bit of information and work done. And as you say, the actual advantages to the timings of the press conferences and having somebody cover one and somebody cover another when they overlap. But it also feels to me that, I don't know, it's an incredible amount of work for you, very, very, very tiring. But those stand interviews that you do with Marek and Rob and the others, they give a real hands-on feel and impression that I don't think just remote coverage would ever get. And going back to the COVID year, that felt a little, that felt very distant.
Yeah,
the hands-on stuff, the look at some of the amazing displays, the transparent OLEDs, the display that LG had on, they make for absolutely brilliant video snapshots that we can use for the coverage as well. So I think that there's value in you being there, even though you might get to the end of 6 days and think, I'm done.
Yeah, and of course, why not have got the confirmation on the absence of the MLA technology, because nobody announced that they were dropping MLA. It was only you pestering these guys and saying, is there no MLA technology this time around, that we were able to get that confirmed and up on the website sort of pretty much from day one.
Yeah. Sorry, Phil, you're going back next year as well.
Well, yeah. I had serious doubts, and I still have serious doubts, and we'll see how this year pans out. Because the other thing is, you know, we go all this way to CES and so on, but I'm off next week to a TV launch event. And I'm off to one in February as well, just waiting on confirmation of dates. And there'll be one in March, and there'll be one in April. And we'll get far more information. We'll actually get hands-on with a product that's going to be sold in this country. So again, that raises the question, you know, what is the purpose of CES? And if the purpose of CES is to show off and give manufacturers the opportunity to get us excited for the year, all I'm saying to manufacturers is, get us excited for the coming year. You know, tell us about it. Tell us why I should come and speak to you, and you tell me and my listeners and viewers and everybody else associated with AV Forums why we should care about your product this year. It's not rocket science, but for some, it's like trying to get blood from a stone at some points. Just be a bit more open.
I did find myself when I was writing things up, like the amount of stories that I wrote about CES, they ended up with a line, something along the lines of, there wasn't much in terms of finer details or specifications. So you'd get the press release, and it's almost like they're giving you the mere basics that they could get away with to get 500 words or something. And like I said at the top, you know, you're going to have 101 questions you want to ask these people, and there wasn't a lot of that information that was easily accessible. And you just think, like you said, give us a little thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is no surprise to anybody. We all know when CES is, you know, you manufacturers, you're spending $500,000 on your stands and all your staffing and getting it. Just tell us what it is that we're looking at and why we should be excited for the year ahead. I mean, we all get the fact that they want to push technologies and so on, and, you know, AI this and AI that and so on. But at the end of the day, it's also about what the consumer is going to get this year from you, and just being a little bit. Panasonic did it perfectly. old school, old fashioned, press launch. This is a product. Come and have hands on with it. Ask us any questions you like. And that's the way it was. And there was nothing hidden or nothing that was, well, you can measure it when you get one in. Well, that tells me or my listeners what, nothing. It's give us something to go on. And at the end of the day, you know, we're giving you the opportunity as a at the beginning of the year to tell us what it is that you guys want this product to be. Then we'll test it later in the year and see if it lives up to what your claims are at the beginning of the year. But if at the beginning of the year you're saying, well, you measure it.
There was another a good example of finding out a little nugget of information on the floor when you were doing one of your interviews, which for me was something I thought the Hisense should have led with, and that was their new support for HDMI 2.1 ports on some upcoming TVs, which is something that obviously you've had to put in your reviews for the last 2 or 3 years for a lot of the Hisense TVs. It's a shame they've only got two, and one of them is you being used for EARC. Now they've got on certain models the U7 Q Pro, they've got full four, and I thought, well, why haven't you led with that? That's quite a scoop. So, and the fact that you were there meant that I could contact you, you could find out, and we got that information quite quickly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that is the benefit of being on the show floor. My frustration is that, you know, it's so spread out. There's so much to do in the week. And when you're making all that effort, and it's not just me, there's hundreds of us out there all trying to do the same thing and all trying to do the same job and so on. And we just want a little bit more transparency, a little bit more from manufacturers, that if we're all taking the time and trouble to go out to Vegas, and believe me, Vegas is not, you know, for a holiday. Yeah, Vegas is great. Go lose a few quid in the casinos and go see a show and that kind of thing. For events like this, it's not a great place. it's a lot of travel, and it's a lot of one venue to another venue to another venue and running around. And if we're all, and I'm not talking about just us, I'm talking about everybody that goes out to cover that show, if we're all making the effort, all I'm asking is, you know, manufacturers, make a little bit more effort to tell us important things about the products that you're launching for the year ahead and so on. If you don't have anything, then take a leaf out of Sony's book. Sony are not ready to tell us about their TVs. I guess Sony want a little bit more exposure in terms of they want everybody's attention and not fight for everybody's attention at a show like CES. So they're going to do their own thing. And at CES, they showed off a lot of really interesting things about how you make films. So a lot of it was the motion capture stuff. A lot of it was the, you know, the screens that and so on. And they showed that off. That's technology they do and so on. And they had nothing to tell us in terms of TV, so they didn't bother. And hats off to them. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, fair enough, they're not there. We'll do an event with them probably April, May, whatever, and we'll talk about their TVs then. And of course, they get everybody's attention then because nobody else is fighting for that attention. If that's the case, then if that's what CES is going to turn into, it's probably not worth our while. But if you are going to launch your products, if you're talking about TV products and so on, then my only frustration this year is just be a little bit more, you know, when the show is, you know what's coming up. Have something to show us and tell us, and rather than some of the non-information that was given and frustration on the back of that.
Yeah, I would have liked to give a shout out to LG for actually sending us stuff in advance of CES, one of the few companies to do it. Because like you say, everyone's shouting for attention in the same couple of days.
Yeah.
And you'd think more companies would kind of play outside the margins a little bit so they do get that exposure. And LG are one of the few that they announce what their gaming monitors, the projectors and so on and so forth. They gave us that information a few days in advance, so we were able to get those out of the way long before all the big TV stuff. So from an editorial point of view, we already know that we've got like five presentations to sit through in one evening. Big thumbs up for them not having to add that to the to-do list.
The last thing I want to do is thank everybody out there who's still watching this and watched our CES coverage and read all the news stories and everything else. Because it makes the hard work worthwhile if you guys are also enjoying what it is that we're looking at and taking that in. And there was lots of questions, there was lots of feedback, there was lots of engagement on the videos and the news stories and stuff on AV Forums as well. So thank you for taking the time to do that. And of course, we only do it for you guys. If, if none of you were watching and none of you were interested, we wouldn't be doing what we are doing with that. So again, thank you for that. If you've got questions, if you've got things that you want us to follow up on, then either put them in the comments below on this video on YouTube, or if you're listening to the podcast, podcast@avforums.com on the email, or if you go to the forums and put your comments under the podcast on the forums. Myself, Andy, and Ian will pick up on these, we'll look at them, and we'll come back in future podcasts. Where we can, we're going to bring people in for interviews this year. So hopefully we'll have special podcasts throughout the year covering not just TV announcements and releases and so on, but also all the AV and hi-fi stuff as well. We're doing all of that. I'm actually sitting in the new studio. It's almost finished. We're going to do lots of content this year. That's the whole plan, is to do more of these TV, not just reviews, but how-tos, tutorials, looking at different products, how to wire up an AVR, all that kind of thing. We're going to cover all of that this year. So again, if you've got anything you want us to look at, anything you're not sure about, anything you want us to cover in a little bit more detail, then again, put them in the comments section or go to the feedback section of AV Forums and say, hey guys, I really want to see this or see that. And we're going to do all of that this year because we're about to start planning for the year ahead. Now we know what's coming in terms of some of the products. We're going to start planning all that out. So I don't think there's anything else from me. Andy, Ian, anything else you want to mention just at the end of the CES coverage here or what's coming up for the year?
No, I think I mentioned the HDMI 2.1, which I thought was a very interesting development. There's obviously HDMI 2.2 was announced as well, but
one story.
I don't really think that's going to affect anybody too soon. And look at how well HDMI 2.1 was rolled out. So
yeah, that's it. That's why I just didn't bother covering it, because it was a case of and it's so far ahead of where we need to be at the minute. Let's get HDMI 2.1 sorted out and manufacturers having four inputs and, like you say, all that kind of thing. But yeah, anything from you, Ian?
Not really. No, the only other things that caught my eye was a few other lifestyle models, like the LG lifestyle projector. I thought was quite a curiosity. Yeah. They kind of got some, it's interesting feedback. People kind of, some liking the look of it. I thought it just looked a bit strange, but it just seems that there's a bit more of a crossover in terms of lifestyle and consumer products. I mean, you mentioned like the likes of the TVs, the frame, the new Hisense, and they seem to be pushing themselves more towards being better TVs as well as being cool looking lifestyle products. So I think there's kind of quite a nice sign of sort of almost synchronicity lining up between the lifestyle and the standard consumer products. So if they can get so that the product itself works as well as it looks, then there could be some interesting developments there over the next sort of 12 months. And the other thing that makes me sort of curious for the year ahead is, talked a lot about how well Hisense and TCL have been doing and their big plans, and it just makes me curious as to how the other manufacturers will respond to that and what they'll do, whether they have to react, whether they will react, which probably leads us into CES 2026, which I don't really want to start thinking about quite yet.
No, me neither.
Get this 12 months out of the way first.
Still need to catch up on this
from the last one.
Right, so that wraps up our CES coverage. Like I say, everything we've spoken about, obviously we'll get into more detail as we get more and more information, and that's going to be in the next few weeks. Podcast is back to normal from February, so we will have the usual mix of hi-fi, home AV, TV, and so on. We'll also have our short videos on the YouTube channel. Of course, the full-length audio podcast will be available the second Monday of every month. But my thanks to Ian and Andy. Andy, do you want to do the competitions just to wrap us up?
Right, hardware competitions for this month and ending quite soon. We've got £500 to spend on camera gear with MPB. MPB is a platform for selling, buying and trading camera gear, and it's the largest global platform for you swapping and getting hold of used equipment and video gear, photo and video gear. So that closes Friday the 31st of January 2025. And the other big competition we've got is a Fell amp from Fell Audio. They've just released this worth £599. Got a great review on the site. And that closes on Friday, February the 28th, 2025. There's also a range of DVDs, Blu-rays and 4K discs available for patrons and standard AVF members to win. All competitions are open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 who are residents of the UK. So head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for that, Andy. We don't have any previous winners and so on to announce this week, but come back for to the next podcast. We will have that. And also, don't forget there are DVDs, Blu-rays, 4K discs, all that kind of things to win as well. So it's not just hardware. So just go and check out the competitions page at AV Forums to find out all about that. But that's it for our AV Forums CES 2025 special. My thanks again to Ian and Andy for their time. Of course, our next episode will be Monday the 10th of February. So it's always the second Monday of the month for this podcast. So we'll have Hi-Fi, Home AV, and of course, TV news and that. And of course, also Screen Time with AV Forums. They just put a video out today as well for Mr. Lynch, the sad passing of Mr. Lynch. So stay tuned for that one as well. Go watch that. And they are the second Monday of the month. So that'll be the 24th of February for that one. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching. It has been a feature-packed episode. And we'll see you again for the next one. Goodbye.